All right, good afternoon, everyone. If you can take your seats, we've got a jam-packed hour. Want to get the most out of it. Like every other session, it's standing room only. What a great conference so far, right? All right, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Myrna Estrada. I'm a region general manager for Safeco Insurance, and Safeco Insurance is a Liberty Mutual company. And we are a proud sponsor of the Texas Conference for Women. In fact, I think this is my third year here, and every year it just gets bigger and bigger. And I'm just so impressed with the quality, not only of the speakers, the facilities, but the attendance. I mean, look at this room. It's incredible. So we've got quite the interesting topic on hand, right? Working with difficult people. Who out there can say they have never had to work with a difficult person? It's a joke, right? It's just not possible. So fortunately for all of you, we've got some real experts on hand to kind of help us sort through this very important topic. And you know, it's funny, I say to myself, if we're all being honest with ourselves, not only have we had to work with difficult people, but I know I can speak for myself, I'm sure I was one of the difficult people to work with, right? So what I'd like to do is take a moment to just talk a little bit about, you know, obviously this incredible venue, this incredible event. I want to, you know, really speak to Liberty Mutual, who of course also is in really strong support of the advancement of women. And we have an employee resource group, like many of you all do, that target women issues. And so we're very proud to be part of this event and to be part of this this topic that we're speaking to today. So what I'm going to do is at this point just speak to our thought leader for the day, who is Amy Cooper-Hakeem. I should say Dr. Amy Cooper-Hakeem. She's an industrial organizational psychology practitioner and workplace expert. She's a speaker, author, and executive consultant, and founder of the Cooper Strategic Group. She helps employees and employers to get along better, and coaches and leaders and employees to improve productivity, morale, satisfaction, and overall work-life balance, that work-life balance that we all seek. Her book, Working with Difficult People, provides clear strategies to effectively handle the 10 types of difficult bosses, colleagues, and subordinates. The book recently hit the number one in sales in Amazon in the books in the etiquette area. She's been highlighted in Parade magazine and has been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Chicago Tribune, Fast Company, CNBC, Make It Happen, Inc. magazine, The List, and the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. So without further ado, please help me welcome Amy Hakeem.
Thank you so much, Myrna. Wow, what a packed crowd. For those of you coming, please continue to file in. We're so happy you're here with us. And I am truly honored to be standing before you today to talk about a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and hopefully to yours as well, working with difficult people, but not just dealing with those difficult people, rather figuring out a way so that we can overcome it and enjoy our workday and those whom we interact with. So I have a phenomenal panel, and I'll be sharing their bios with you shortly. But before doing so, I'd like to tell you a little bit about working with difficult people and what that book and work means to me. I was truly honored to be allowed to revise and modernize Working with Difficult People. This is a personal project that has great feeling because the original author of the book was my grandmother. She wrote Working with Difficult People over 25 years ago, and she inspired me to become an industrial organizational psychologist and to go into the field. When I was graduating college, I sat down with her. She was a mentor of mine. Unfortunately, passed away many years ago. But I sat with her and I said, I'm thinking of either going into clinical psychology or law. And back when we always read newspapers, the hard copy, she handed me a newspaper clipping. And she said, Amy, look at this field. It's a relatively new field, industrial organizational psychology. And she said, look at it, it's great. Deals with motivation and time management and goal setting, dealing with difficult people. And I said, oh, I love it. And so I ended up going on and becoming an industrial organizational psychologist. Well, years pass, and I have a consulting practice, and I also teach, and I do public speaking. And I realized that my grandmother's book, Working with Difficult People, was still selling. But I've noticed that many of the things that she wrote about 25 years ago, while the meat of the book was good and a lot of the bones were good, there were certain aspects and issues that weren't yet covered. Specifically, dealing with multi-generational teams, dealing with an issue if your boss is 20 years younger than you, dealing with issues with cross-cultural diversity, technology. And I approached the book publisher and asked if I might start on this very exciting project and revise and modernize the book that my grandmother wrote. And I was so honored when they said yes, because it was one of those special moments where I got to relive actually sitting and working with her side by side. And I read her words, and I edited and added material to make it something that we can move forward into this generation and hopefully beyond. And it was something that was so special to me because I could truly add to her legacy. So I'm especially excited to be here to talk to you guys about some concepts within the book and then to break into dialogue in the panel. So there are three specific things that I hope that you can take away for dealing with difficult people. When I go into corporations and people approach me and say, I can't handle this, or I'm so upset because, one of the first things that I get 5 out of 10 times is, so-and-so doesn't like me. So my first question to you guys, how many friends do you have at work? 1, 2, 5, put up your hands. 2, a handful. Okay, so I think that as women, we oftentimes want to be liked. I mean, I like to be liked. I want everyone to be my friend. But in the workplace, we need to remember that the people we work with are not our friends. They may be, but that's going to be an exception. And if you go to work realizing that your job at work is to do what? Work, and not to socialize, then you're able to make an important distinction that will help you with the difficult relationships. Are you friends with people who are truly difficult? No. You might be friendly with them. They might be in a social circle with you. But you won't be close friends with people who you don't like. But unfortunately, at work, sometimes we're stuck with people who may act or behave in a way that we don't necessarily appreciate. So if we are able to say, let's not focus on being friends with people at work, but rather consider them your friendlies. If we have people we're friendly to, we are cordial to, we are kind to, we hold the door open for, we respond to an email for, if we take that and we just focus on being friendly, then those expectations we have of those individuals are a lot smaller. We just need people to be kind. That's it. And I think we can all do that, and we can expect that in return. So don't focus on friendship. Now, by the way, I have a very, very good friend of mine when I used to work at Office Depot who is still a friend. And when she first heard me talk about friends versus friendly, she said, wait, nobody at work? And I had lots of people at work who I was friends with, I would go out to lunch with, I would hang out with. But she might be my only real, true friend that I walked away from when I left that organization to move on. And so you need to think about who is it that you might want to be friends with, who you might want to go out to lunch with when you're no longer in the organization or when you're no longer in the industry. Those are your true friends, and they very likely could be in the workplace sitting next to you. Great. But again, that's going to be the handful. It's not going to be your whole office. Okay, number one, remember that you should have friendlies, not friends. And that leads directly to the next point. When possible, take emotion out of the situation. Very difficult to do. But when somebody ticks you off at work, what's the first thing you do? You say, gosh, I'm so angry. I'm so mad. This person did this. This person's such a bop, 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 bop. That's not helpful. It's much more effective when we can take emotion out of the situation. and when we can simply say, it bothers me when so-and-so does this because. So we're focusing instead of what happens, the symptoms, let's look at the root issue. What is the reason so-and-so's ticking you off and making you so mad? Is it because he's not returning an email on time? Is it because she's interrupting you in a meeting? Those are the things that you need to fix. Those are the things that you need to interact with that individual directly to fix, and or go to the appropriate authority or person to help you to mitigate the situation. So we can be less emotional and more direct in our relationships when we do take the friend component away, and we're only working on being sociable. We're only focused on being congenial. We're only focused on being polite and professional with those friendlies in the office. So we're going to have friendlies, and we're going to not be emotional. We're going to try our best to be practical and logical so that we can get to the root issue and fix it. It's much easier to say to someone, instead of, gosh, you make me so mad, I hate that, 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 instead say, I can't easily respond to our client if I don't hear from you when I send you an email. What can we do so that if I need you, I get a response quickly? Should I knock on your door? Should I call you? You're getting to the root of the issue, okay? Final thing before we jump into our panel. In today's world, we rely so much on technology. People take pictures of what they're eating. People are texting left and right. I mean, I don't take pictures of what I eat, but I do text a decent amount. And actually, a lot of people prefer to text instead of call because it saves time. I'm an old schooler. I like face-to-face personality, one-on-one interaction. When dealing with a difficult situation, be honest. Are you more likely to text or email your complaint than you are to talk to the person into their face? Yeah. What we need to do when possible is break that habit. If you're able to go directly to the person with whom you have an issue, do so. If I'm looking at you face to face, square in the eye, and I tell you, you know, it upsets me when I'm not productive because I need your help in order to be successful, and here's how. If you have that dialogue face to face, you're likely to know, number one, if your message is delivered properly and if it's received. But then, follow up that message by utilizing technology. Create an electronic paper trail. You have a problem with your boss, you have an interaction, you agree to some type of compromise with a particular colleague or a subordinate, follow that up with an email. Hey, Susie, great chatting with you today. Thank you so much for your time. Just to recap, here's what we agreed upon. Let me know if I missed something. Doing so sets the tone for clear and direct communication. It also ensures that your message was heard, and hey, if you mess up or you don't quite see eye to eye and you're not leaving that meeting with the same feeling, you then can fix it through the technology means and have it to recap and review if necessary. And if you have to call that conversation into question and get the facts, then you're able to do so. Okay, so we got three ideas that we're starting out with, first few minutes on. Make sure you got your friendlies. Take that emotion out. And utilize technology as needed in order to be effective and to make sure that your communication is clear. Okay, great. So I would like to introduce our fantastic panel. And the way that this is going to work is I will sit down with our panel. We'll have some really interesting dialogue. And then last 15 minutes, Myrna's going to hop back up here, and she's going to help us with some questions from the audience. So if you guys have questions, we'll definitely be excited to field them and to answer them. So I have Amanda Gill here. Wave hi, Amanda.
Hi, everybody.
Amanda is the Vice President of Oracle's North American Talent Advisory. In this role, Amanda is responsible for leading the North American organization of 130 recruiting managers and talent advisors who support the hiring needs for Oracle's business groups, including campus recruiting. Her teams have been providing close to 6,000 highly qualified candidates a year to meet the business and talent needs of their clients. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you.
Next to Amanda, we have Jane Gostaska.
Hello.
Jane is the General Manager of U.S. Product Supply and Distribution for Phillips 66 Commercial. In her 20-year career in the oil and gas industry, she has become a change agent who believes in delivering exceptional results by creating greater tribal engagement. Her passion for developing people is reflected in her pursuit of greater organizational knowledge sharing and her desire to create winning teams. Her greatest pet peeve is the status quo. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you.
And finally, we have Tracy Kwan. Hi, Tracy. Tracy is the asset manager for the Appalachian Basin region for Statoil's U.S. onshore division and is based right here in Austin, Texas. She is responsible for managing the development of Statoil's assets and operations in the area. Tracy has more than 20 years of experience in the energy industry and has held various leadership positions within the company, including Director of Risk for Statoil in Canada and Leader of Economic Analysis within Statoil's Marketing and Midstream Unit in Norway. So welcome. I'm sure you can see we have a tremendous panel with a wealth of information at our fingertips. And so, again, I'm excited not only to delve into these questions, but also to make sure that we have time to answer your questions at the end. Okay, so if you guys have questions, do jot them down, and we've got those microphones for you to pipe in. Okay, let's start with Amanda. Amanda, how do you feel your natural demeanor has helped you to effectively deal with difficult people?
Well, I'm going to start from the beginning. And how I grew up, like some of you in this room, I grew up in a very traditional household where my mother was a stay-at-home mom and my father was a career person. He was an orthopedic surgeon, chief of staff at the hospital, pressure cooker sort of role, a pretty stressed person in general. We used to kind of walk on eggshells. I think he was under constant pressure all of the time. And it took its toll in the family where, I learned how to be very diplomatic at home. I learned how to skirt those situations, kind of diffuse the bomb that could go off at any time, you know, when you have a bunch of little kids running around the house. And I remember just growing up feeling like, you know, this isn't terrific. I don't love this, but you learn how to navigate. Fast forward, I ended up going to college and pursuing a degree in psychology, mainly because I was really interested in, I think, what made people tick. I really was interested in why the behavior, why these, you know, sorts of things. And of course, I did not pursue a career in psychology exactly, but my field uses it all the time. And like a lot of you in this room, I'm a mother. I have two grown boys, 17 and 20. And one of them is extremely easy every minute of every day, and the other one is extremely difficult every minute of every day. More complex, a little bit more of an analytical thinker, holds on to problems, lets them fester. And I'm saying this in a complete loving way because I don't think everybody just gets one or the other. I think you get a little of both. But as a result, it's taught me tremendous patience in my approach to just about everyone. I mean, when you have it at home, you would think that that would extend elsewhere. It's taught me empathy and I think how to listen, do a lot more listening than talking, to really hear where somebody's coming from, to understand what their problems are, and to acknowledge them, you know, to really hear them. I tend to run not emotional at all as a result of that, because I think so many emotions coming at you all the time, you tend to step back at it or step back from it. And so I take things from a very non-emotional perspective. If I feel emotional, I'll speak less. And I'm very data and fact-driven and business outcome-driven as a result, which my kids probably don't appreciate, but but that's how I roll. So. But I think one of the keys is that I don't start off by thinking the worst of anyone, a stranger or somebody I know. I start off thinking the best, and then I go from there, because from experience, if you start off thinking the worst and you're wrong, there's no coming back from it. I mean, really, that person could have just been having a hard day. And you've already started it off in a place that you can't come back from. So I prefer to think the best. I prefer to really collaborate and ask people where they're coming from, what they think, what they want, what outcomes they're looking for, what they think the solution should be, which is all fact-finding, you know, up front. And I just feel that that kind of approach just starts things off in a nicer way. And most people, you know, tend to see that you're really trying to help, you're trying to listen, you're acknowledging that they have a problem. Most people appreciate that. And the ones who don't, I mean, you know, you might not have been able to help them anyway. So, you know, it's just my life experience has run into my work experience, and for the most part, it's been positive.
That's wonderful. And I think that when we recognize the need to look in a positive way, that's really huge. Because most people that we have difficult relationships with really might just be struggling with their own issues or their own demons. And if we show them that we're not a threat, but that we are working toward the same end goal, there are lots of ways that we can get to that end goal. And they may have a completely different approach, but they're going to be more willing to look and listen if you go at it with that kind approach instead of trying to attack them. Okay, good. Jane, sometimes interactions with difficult people leave us feeling distracted and unsettled. What are some ways that you might address that?
Interactions with difficult people, to me, take a few different dimensions. Sometimes there are some that are really severe and some are less severe. Sometimes I come out of a meeting and it doesn't feel very good and I just need to vent a little bit, and that works okay for the process. But there are other interactions that I have with people that really leave me unsettled. And so I don't know about you, but what unsettled means to me is I'm trying to get work done and it comes up again. And then I'm trying to get something else done with my kids and it's recycling again. And I'm trying to sleep at night and it's still recycling through my head. And I keep replaying, what could I have done differently? Or how would I want that to work differently? And when I was thinking about this particular issue, I remembered a time very early in my career. And I was going to be traveling internationally for the first time. And I was traveling with two relatively senior gentlemen. And they were kind of, whoa, yeah. That's impressive.
You took the lights.
I did. Wow. They're probably channeling me. They don't want me to tell it. Woo, they really don't want me to tell it. All right. I think we're okay.
So the two gentlemen.
Much more senior than me, and we were heading to West Africa. So anybody here ever been to West Africa? It's not, you get a little nervous going there. And we were going through Paris having dinner with a customer before we flew in to where we had oil production there. You've probably been to West Africa.
No, never.
Okay. So the game plan was, after the first night there, we were going to meet in the morning and we were going to take a cab to the airport. And the policy at my hotel, the policy at my office was always the highest ranking person there usually pays the bill when you're traveling or when you're going out to eat. And we said, hey, we'll pool whatever money we have left to go to the airport with our francs in the morning. And I'm like, okay, great. So I didn't have too much money left in the morning. I pooled it. These two gentlemen, I pulled my, whatever it was, 15 francs out of my pocket. And one of the guys, this new guy that I was going to be working with in this role fairly closely, he just stopped and he looked at me and he got very angry. And he said, how the hell did you think you were going to get to the airport with 15 francs? And I was like, my heart just started beating really, really quickly. And I was very startled. And it was just this gigantic amount of hostility that came up very, very quickly. And this was day one of a 7-day international trip. And it took me a second. I still get nervous when I think about it. But it took me a second, and I stepped back. And I said, well, first of all, we were all going to pool our money together. And Also, I have extra dollars, so I assumed that I could change more if we needed them at the front desk. And then he just didn't say anything, and he kind of backed off. The rest of the trip was not as hostile as that, but there was the walking on eggshells, and every bit of inconvenience or inefficiency in the trip, I felt as though there was going to be this explosion. And so it was extremely uncomfortable for me. And part of my strategy, ultimately where I ended up dealing with this, when I go through situations and I'm recycling again and again, I first have to understand, what exactly is it about the situation that bothers me? And I have to be able to articulate it. And I have to be able to articulate it about myself. So that when I approach the person about it, I'm able to say it. And it's a very hard exercise. So you have to fill in the blank about, when you spoke to me like that, it made me very uncomfortable. I wasn't sure why you were so angry with me. And you have to be able to do it in a way that doesn't make the other person defensive. And it's a very hard thing to do. And when I came back from the trip, my boss asked me and the other gentleman together, not the one that kind of was nasty, but they asked us how the trip went. And we talked about the business items, and then she asked me how it went. And I said, you know, the business stuff all went well, but I said, I would request that I don't have to travel with Robert alone ever. And I said, his behavior towards me as a coworker was non-professional, and it really is unacceptable. And I looked at the other person traveling with me, and I said, did I mischaracterize that? And the other gentleman, I think, was really shocked that I even said it, but he said, no, you didn't. And a couple minutes later, I got a phone call from her boss calling me in to talk about it, because I think he felt like it was a sexual harassment kind of deal, and I wasn't very clear on it. And I told him exactly what happened, and I told him about the pattern of behavior. And he just looked up at me, and he said, thanks for telling me that. He's been receiving coaching for this. And so the sense of relief that I felt and validation, and then later on anger about, you jerks, you know he has a problem, and then you moved him to another job. But it made me feel validated, and he instilled in me as well. He said, thank you for coming and telling to me, and now you need to go and talk to him about that. And so he made me build that muscle of forcing myself to articulate what was it that bothered me, and being able to set an appointment with him and to do it in a neutral ground, and to be able to tell him why I was there to talk to him, what the objective of the meeting was for me. I didn't expect to change him. I didn't expect him to be different. But I did phrase it in terms of, you know, when we were traveling, I didn't always feel comfortable. This is why. I don't feel like our conversations were as respectful as they could have been. We have an important business relationship that we have to maintain. I said, I respect all the experience that you bring to the table, and I need to learn from you. And it's going to be very difficult for me to do that if we don't maintain a mutual level of respect. I don't even remember any much about it. I remember being so scared because I was so nervous, but I practiced and I made sure I knew what I wanted to say when I went in.
And Jane, that's key. Mm-hmm. You know, the practicing is what we need to do. And we can record ourselves at home, looking in a mirror or talk to somebody and have that person role play, if possible, the negative or the mean demeanor, and see how you respond. Because oftentimes, just that clear communication of, hey, I don't like this type of behavior. This is not working for me because this is what I need from you in order to be successful, in order to be productive. This is what I need from you in order for me to move forward with my day, in order for our team to reach its goals. We have to have that language. And the more we practice it, the more confident we are. And if we're shaken like this, we're definitely not as effective as if we appear assertive and confident. And so we can do so without being bullyish without being aggressive in a negative way. I think as females, and I know there are a couple men in here too, but I think that there's that stereotype, and we were just hearing about that with Cheryl during lunch. We don't want to be seen as an aggressive female. We don't want to be seen as someone who's always, you know, asking for that extra help or asking, no. We have to know what is available, and we have to know that we don't need to stand for behavior that isn't acceptable, and there are tools and resources at our fingertips. So, great. Okay, thank you. Tracy, please share an example you've had with a difficult colleague. How did you handle it? What did you learn? And what advice would you give to someone in the same situation?
Thanks. I think the example that I think of is not too dissimilar to the one that Jane just spoke about. A few years ago, I worked with a colleague who, when he would become stressed or frustrated, he would become angry. He would become very condescending, and he would criticize work, people, etc., etc. When I first joined the team, where we were peers, the first time that happened toward me, I was really taken aback by it. I hadn't seen that before, so I was really shocked. But I tried to be big about it, and I just thought, well, maybe he's just having a bad day. And then it happened again, and I started to notice it wasn't just toward me, but he would be that way toward others, and sadly, often towards the people that he supervised. And I could tell that people were afraid to be around him when we came into those situations where it was really busy and we had tight deadlines. So because he was like that, quite often people would talk and they would complain and talk amongst each other. And of course, things get blown out of proportion. And it was really easy to get caught up in that and start to think, yeah, he's really mean and poor us. But then I just kind of thought, I hadn't taken the time to really kind of understand, you know, his real side of the story. So I did make an effort, go for lunch. We were at an offsite one time, and I tried to get private time with him just to get to know him better personally. And I did that several times over the course of a couple of months. I can tell he was a fairly private individual, so he didn't want to be anybody's best friend. But I did get to know him, and he was really good at his job. He was very technically strong, and I had a lot of respect for him insofar as what he brought to the table. It was just in those moments where it was really tense and difficult, and he got stressed out and frustrated. And his arguments for being frustrated were valid. I felt it too. So he had some very good points, but it didn't make it okay for him to be hostile toward people. So I tried to muster up the courage to say, do you know that when you behave that way, it has this effect on people, and we're not meeting our deadlines because, as a consequence, the work is not getting done. People are afraid to be honest about things that are really important, and it's affecting our team delivery. I was afraid to be honest about it, but at the end, after he vented, of course, I just listened and listened. And it had I could see a visible effect on him where he actually started to feel like, oh, I'm not alone in this. And he actually felt like his opinions were valid and that he had allies. And so I think just by listening to his story, he didn't feel so attacked. And I noticed in future dealings, he still had moments, but it was less so. Hello? So I think I noticed it had a positive impact. The meetings that we would have down the road, I could tell that he was trying to manage how he would react to tense situations. It never got perfect, but I would say that the biggest impact was for me, because I understood where he came from, and I started to actually enjoy his company and get to know him as a person, and over time, there were a lot of things I actually enjoyed about my interactions with him. And so I didn't react the same way, and it allowed me to actually moderate some of the discussions that we would have, and we were able to actually move things forward. I think at the end of the day, because it helped me and it helped the team, I thought it was a good outcome, but I have to admit, I think it was hard on us when we would interact and he would kind of behave that way, but I actually think it was harder on him in the end, because conflict is exhausting. And I felt a little bit bad for him after a little while, and I think that helped to shape how I interacted with him in the future in a good way.
Thank you. When hearing your story, I think that it's so important for us to truly recognize the issues that are deep-rooted that so many people have. Those of us who have great interactions with others and those of us who don't. Some might have a little more empathy than others, and some might feel that they need to try to be kinder than others. But a lot of times, if we take that moment and we let the person who's really bothering us understand that we're on his or her side at whatever level, find some common ground. Even if you abhor the individual, you all must have something that you're working toward. And when we get that, then we also can hold hands, so to speak, virtually, and move forward towards a common goal. Myrna, excuse me, do we have 10 minutes total left? 10 minutes, okay, thank you. Okay. Amanda, please share how you equate your work to being like a detective and how that relates to dealing with difficult people.
Thanks. I alluded to before when I was first speaking about assuming the best about people and always giving them the benefit of the doubt. So when I'm approached by a seemingly difficult person, my first thought is not this person's just a really impossible person. My first thought is, what's making this person difficult? It might be situational, and I'd really like to know what's the source of their frustration. So, the other piece I always factor in is I work in a very large organization, very complex organization that can be very, very difficult to navigate, especially if somebody's new to the organization, a newly promoted manager or a newly hired employee. And I remember being that person a long time ago, and it's daunting and it's difficult and it can be extremely frustrating. So, to me, my detective hat goes on because I want to get to the source of what the problem really is. Because what they tell you the problem is, very frequently, is not what the problem is. They just don't know it. And so that's the beginning of the detective work, is really getting down to it. Because until you can effectively get what the heart of the matter is, you cannot effectively solution to it. And you'll waste an awful lot of time. So getting it out there and then, stating it, getting agreement, the collaboration part, that yes, you're right, this is what the issue is. And then it might be not even my problem to solve. It may be other business partners' problems, and I at that point can say, let's loop in this one, this one, this one, and we can together effectively solve to your problem. And there's typically a feeling of relief. It's like, aha, I didn't even know my problem was what my problem is, and now I know what it is, and that's the first step.
Yeah, this clear communication is critical. When I go into corporations, that's literally the main issue. People don't clearly share what their problems are because they're afraid of upsetting someone, because they're afraid of repercussions. Don't do that. Be kind, be calm, take emotion out, and share your thoughts. Jane, what are some strategies for dealing with controlling people outside of the office?
I have kids. I assume there's folks in the audience that have kids. As such, I work with a lot of the kids' mothers. I'm a Girl Scout leader. And as part of that, yes, and I love it. But as part of that, I realize that there are certain moms that would be very thrilled to have their agenda followed and their own personal agenda or for their daughter. And one example of this I remember was a mom wanted to kick some girl out of the troop because she didn't like the way the girl's mom paid her cookie money late. Or, it was one of these, like, she gave the money in late. And so, and I've had, just several different experiences that way of people trying to do things that... or trying to control things in a way that serves their own interest. And part of what I try to do in situations like that is to reframe the issue with the parent. First of all, I confront them about it gently but firmly. I don't let it slide. Depending on what it is that they're trying to control, if you let them control it once, they want to control it every time. So sometimes there's ways of, and I credit Brooke with this, who's here, giving them what they need, not what they want. And I I talk to them about what is it that we're trying to achieve here. So in some ways, it is taking a step back and finding the common ground to say, what does success look like for us here? What are we trying to achieve? We're trying to achieve getting the girls a leadership experience. We're trying to give them the opportunity to understand what it's like to work with other people that they will have difficulties with as well. But ultimately, I want her to understand that we're not going to punish the girl for the issue that she had with her mother. And so that my strategies on things like that are to be able to reframe the issue around what success looks like for what we're trying to achieve, and then try to reframe the problem that way.
We oftentimes ascribe to a what's in it for me philosophy. We want to understand how our actions or our inactions will impact us or what we love or like. So whether it's going to be that we're punished for behaving a certain way or that we're rewarded for behaving a certain way, we want to understand that. So when we have that frank dialogue and we recognize that joint goal, then we can make it happen. Tracy, what kind of difficulties have you experienced across cultures, and how did you handle them?
My first comment is that culture is diverse. I mean, what is culture? It's anything from different countries, different social norms, different companies. The thing that I'm thinking about is the different country experience. And probably like many of you, I've had the good fortune of living in a few different countries and being immersed in a very different culture. So I'm from Canada, and I moved to Norway for a couple of years and lived there. And when I thought about this question, I thought that I actually came away from Norway without experiencing difficulties due to culture. And why was that? And I think when you go into, so for me, going from Canada into Norway, where I expected very different ways of thinking, very different languages. And because in oil and gas, it's a very global industry, I was working in Norway, in a Norwegian work environment with people from all over the world. And so going into that environment, my mindset was completely different. I went in expecting difference. I went in expecting to have some challenges. And so because of that, anytime you engage with somebody in an environment like that, you instantaneously start with, where are you from? What has your journey been? And you get to know that person at a personal level, and you start to work through differences immediately without even thinking. And so I came away with 2 years of automatically working that way and people working with each other that way, and it was really fun. It was actually really enjoyable to just embrace all of the differences that these different countries and the people from them offered. And I noticed that when I came here, back to North America, I stopped thinking that way and I stopped engaging. And it was really interesting of a check for me to say, why is that? The point is that all cultures have something great to offer, other things that are not so desirable, and it's important to make an effort to understand where people are coming from and embrace the best of what they can bring to the table.
Fantastic. Myrna.
So lots of great information shared today, and one of the most critical things I think for all of us who attend these types of sessions is, what are the two or three nuggets that we can take away? So this next 15 minutes is really important to us because we want to do that for you. And so if you have a question that you'd like one of our panelists to answer, please go to the mics, get ready. We'd like to get as many off as possible, so if you can get right to the question at hand, perhaps one of these panelists has had some experience they can share with you. I am going to kick it off with one quick question for all of you because we'd like for you to just quickly share two or three bullets of tips, the most effective way of communicating with difficult people.
Okay, well, we've been talking about this, but definitely be direct and clear. Make eye contact. Mm-hmm. Nod. Make sure that person's responding back. And stay calm. When you are agitated, no matter how angry you are, it ends up making it that much worse because you can't hear the message and your delivery is angry.
I think, Amy, to your point earlier, and we didn't get to all of it, but I think once you come to a collaboration and there is agreement on what the expectations and the outcomes are and the road to those, I think following it up, I always do this in an email summary of here's what we discussed, here's what we got to, here's what we agreed to, and here's where we're going with it, is key, because it allows a collaboration. It sets, you know, you could always go back to that. And then following it through with regular reporting and visibility. And I always will proactively come forward and say, here's what's good and here's what's not working before somebody comes to me to tell me what's not working. So I'd suggest that.
We didn't talk about all the different kinds of difficult people. We tended to focus on the angry folks, but there's a lot of different there's a lot of different kinds of difficult people. Needy people, people that are just irritating for some reason to you, people that are extremely negative, or there's just a lot of different things. And part of my advice is understand your tolerance level with those types of people and have an exit strategy or understand what some of those things are when you're dealing with them and practice that with somebody else, because it may come onto you from a place that you don't expect it, and you need to be prepared to be able to exit out of that safely to move on to whatever else you need to do.
I would say find the courage to provide feedback. Many times when we have interactions with people, we stay silent around them, good or bad. And I think the times that I've decided to approach someone and let them know some of the feedback, how some of their behaviors have had impact on people, I've feared that they would be reactive and be defensive, but that hasn't been the case. Most often they've said thank you.
All right, so we're going to start over here on the left, and then we'll come over the right and go back and forth.
Hi, my name's Rebecca Hanai. I work at Oracle. Nice to meet you. Thank you guys for being here. My question, Jane, your story really resonated with me with your trip abroad and being able to confront your teammate immediately or short after your trip. My advice to any of you is, how would you approach a situation if it's not so immediate, if it's maybe after a series of situations, so it doesn't seem like an attack in a sense? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of twofold, my question. What advice do you have if your relationship with this person is strictly over the phone?
Jane, do you want to start?
One of the things I would think about with even over the phone, because I was just talking to somebody else about this, is to say, hey, where are we going? Where do you feel like we're going with our business relationship? Because when I look back over the last X months or whatever, and I think back on our interactions, some of them don't seem like we're heading in the same direction. So again, trying to phrase it in terms of what I'm seeing and then try to understand, back to your point, what they're seeing or feeling, but also with a reflection point on highlighting some examples. You know, you could provide them examples. In addition, if you're looking for some of that feedback, it's probably good to give them advance notice that you want to talk about that ahead of time, so that they have some time to think about it and be able to articulate it as well.
Thank you.
Hi, I was curious about your opinions on more subjective difficult situations, whether it was an entire environment that had a certain like normalized behavior or way of doing things that alienates you, but the mere act of bringing that to anyone's attention, you get pointed out as the difficult one for being the one with an issue for these things. And when it comes to just subjective things in general, right? Because even if you approach it, understanding that your opinion is also subjective and that it warrants a discussion, if it's dismissed outright as if you're pointed to, I think you're the problem here. It's just really hard if your decision is stay quiet or get burned at the stake.
By the way, that's something that a lot of us feel at whatever level. I mean, I was getting chills hearing your story because I think we've all been there. When you're in an environment, specifically in a work environment, it's not just that you have the knowledge and the skills needed to work effectively. There's also a workplace fit. You have to fit with the overall morals and values and culture of that organization. So if you feel truly, even though it's from a subjective manner, that you don't fit there, then it may be something to either bring to a higher level executive to say, hey, you know, I noticed this trend and it doesn't feel right to me and here's why. It might be time for you to do some soul searching. Maybe this isn't the right organization or the correct industry for me. So, but you shouldn't be afraid to share. You don't want to be seen as a tattler or someone who's always going forward and complaining. But instead of complaining, if you offer a suggestion, some constructive feedback, it comes off in a positive manner, especially if you go at it that our end goal is this, and I see that if we perhaps approach it this way, it might be more effective.
How about over here? Thanks. In listening, most of the situations that I heard described tended to seem more where there was there were peer levels, equivalent levels, but how would you modify the approaches that you have when you have a huge imbalance of power and the person is a much more senior person? You can't just say, hey, let's go sit and chat about this that made me uncomfortable. So there must be a different approach or technique that you've used to successfully deal with those types of situations.
I'm going to pass this on, but in my book, actually, it's designed to hit different levels of individuals. So how do you handle a bullyish boss? Is completely different than how you might handle a bullyish colleague and completely different from how you might handle a bullyish subordinate. So then I'm going to pass it to somebody here. Tracy.
I've had the good luck of not having that experience.
That is really challenging. And regardless of whether or not you're confronting somebody that's a peer or not, it's hard. And it takes a lot of courage. And I think first of all, you have to decide whether or not you want to engage. And I haven't read that part in the book, so I don't know what she's going to recommend. But I think you have to decide on some point whether or not it's worth it to you to manage the relationship at a different level. Because I've been through it where I've chosen not to engage on that level because I felt as though I was going to outlast that person. yeah, it is tactical, but I also didn't feel, for me, I didn't feel like the level of engagement that I was going to take in the conversation was going to create meaningful change in our relationship. And I wasn't willing to invest that amount of my personal energy into it. For the ones that I have, when it was actually providing feedback to somebody that I knew was going to be open about it, that was my boss, I usually started the sentence something like this. This feels somewhat awkward for me to talk to you about this, but I'm going to do it anyway because you asked. Or if they didn't ask specifically, because I know you are open to feedback, if you believe that they are. So I'm back to making sure they know that it doesn't feel very good to me to do this, but I wanted to provide them with something, and I make it constructive as well.
I'd like to add something to that, if you don't mind, because I agree with Jane. I agree with what she's saying. I've had situations like this where I've chosen not to. It just didn't make sense, and I felt like the situation would ultimately take care of itself. But the other thing I'd add to it is you can't win over every single person, but you can get advocates elsewhere. It could be within the same business unit. It could be external around it, but it could be influencers to that person that you have a connection with that actually can do you a lot of good as well. So maybe put your efforts into those connections instead.
I think we have time for one more.
I'd also, though, just quickly like to add one thing to that, because I think a lot of us here might have a boss who is overwhelming, a boss who might say, do this, and then 5 minutes later, do that. So how do you handle that? You have to have something in your back pocket. In order for me to be most productive, I need either to do this project or that project. In order for me to be clear, I need. Using that language with a boss is very, very effective. In order for me to meet your goals, in order for me to, whatever it is, I need this. So use that and consistently use that. Your boss will be receptive to that.
I work in an office, and when you do day-to-day tasks, you kind of get tunnel visions, and the coworkers that are next to you, you're next to them daily, where there are some you find it difficult to work with or are beyond super annoying or super emotional. If you want to become a leader and a management someday, how do you practice diplomacy with those people in a way that is positive? That way, when you are someday in a managerial role, that you still have their respect and you're still welcome.
A lot of times in office settings, especially if people are taking their jobs a little bit differently, not as seriously, they might want to gossip or they might want to talk about something that isn't of interest to you. You want to get your work done. So you can simply look at them in the eye and say, thank you so much. I'm on a tight deadline. If this is related to work, I've got 5 minutes. If not, do you want to chat at lunch? You're still friendly and kind, but you are letting them know that your job is work. Anybody want to add to that?
I'm a remote worker. So my entire team is virtually located, so I don't really have a lot of the office situations, but I would say when I have it with employees within our own business unit and it's not productive, I usually will divert the conversation elsewhere to something more productive. I will actually to me, it's like almost paying attention to bad behavior. I will tend to just try to redirect it.
I can't say that happened to me directly, but it did happen within my team where two people, they just didn't click, and one was annoying the other quite a bit. She brought that to my attention, and as a matter of fact, it was fairly straightforward where I then had to sit down and talk with him, and he just didn't know. He didn't realize that these behaviors that he was exhibiting was annoying to others around him, and again, he was appreciative of understanding it. It was awkward for a little bit afterwards, but eventually they were able to talk about it openly too because it was kind of on the table. And I think, again, just bringing some of these things to attention in a very honest and non-confrontational manner usually works out.
I also think that goes to this concept of limits or boundaries, and to the extent that you can tell somebody or provide them feedback about, hey, just because I'm sitting here doesn't mean that I'm not involved in what I'm doing. And coming up with some methodology for asking about, do you have a second to talk about something versus, and if it's not a professional item, that you have to set limits on as well, like what you just talked about. But to be able to come up with a strategy for being able to say, like, hey, I know we sit next to each other and a lot of times I'm working on all of this and I need to focus on it. And if you need to talk to me about something, can you instant message me first and I'll tell you when I have a slot open? I mean, I work in a trading room and we have a lot of people saying, hey, when you have 5 minutes, can you come back? That doesn't mean we don't have a lot of foot traffic anyway, but it's people understand that you need to, if you're interrupting somebody, you're borrowing their time. And so it's fair for you to put limits on that as well.
You can also, by the way, ask for a private workspace. If you have a project and you're in an open office environment, you can ask to work from home, to stay late, to change your hours, some type of a flexible way so that you can have productive time to work too.
So just a quick reminder that Dr. Amy Cooper-Hakeem will be outside the exhibit hall area signing books. And how about a warm applause for our great panelists?